Hello, I'm Joel Hughes.
And I'm Aurora Alexander.
And this is the Psychology Pathways Podcast.
We help busy psychology students succeed.
If you want that's enough of that. Send an email. On this episode, we will argue that after the COVID-19 crisis, it will become more important than ever to, number one, get inside information, number two, have relationally integrated experiences, and number three, have discipline integrated experiences. Specifically, we believe that this experience that we're all having with mandatory distance learning will prove to all psychology students that the credit hours, the courses, the curriculum, and the credential are really only half of the college experience that you need to get the knowledge, skills, and credentials that you need to succeed. Put simply, these are three magic ingredients that transform a college education from average to extraordinary: inside information, relationally integrated experiences, and discipline integrated experiences. So we'll also talk about how to get some of this now and later when the campus reopens. And as a special disclaimer, I just want to point out that nothing that we're saying is intended to make light of the current situation. People are suffering. People are dying. We want to express our sincere concern for you and your family right now. So stay home, stay safe. And you're going to have to email me if you want to get more notes or references or anything, because we're just not going to be doing show notes. The novel coronavirus pandemic of 2020 is going to create an existential crisis for colleges and universities. This level of social and economic disruption is unprecedented in the history of higher education. During the spring of 2020, the world started practicing social distancing. All colleges and universities moved rapidly to remote learning. The campus was closed to all but essential personnel. Every event, including commencement, campus visits, and orientation, was canceled or moved online. Will the campus reopen for fall 2020? Probably. Meanwhile, the economy is headed into a depression, or at least a recession. Usually, this would mean an increase in college enrollment, because enrollment tends to run countercyclical to the economy. That is, when the economy is strong, to a lot of people, it doesn't seem as important to go back to college to get a good job. So when the economy suffers, in contrast, a lot of people either stay in college or go back to college because they can't get a job. However, this time, almost all of the students and many of their family members may be unemployed, and money is going to be tight. This could mean a big decline in enrollment, right at the time that there are less students graduating from high school. And universities compete for new students, usually using a proliferation of academic programs. If you build it, they will come. Well, not anymore. We can't afford it. What does this mean for the future of higher education? And what does this have to do with the college experience that you need? Well, allow me to digress. The business model of higher education was already broken, and now it could end up being crippled. Now, why would that be? Number one, tuition is too high. The states have cut spending on higher education as the population aged. There was a lot more need to spend money on Medicare and Medicaid and other services. When I graduated before you were born, you could attend the University of California for $0 tuition. Think about that. UCLA, UC Berkeley, UC Davis, no money. UC San Diego, free. If you could pay for books and had somewhere to live, you were in college. Well, all that changed. When the states cut funding, the schools had to increase tuition, which was paid for by generous federally guaranteed student loans. So now student debt exceeds $1.6 trillion, which is over $500 billion more than the total U.S. credit card debt. We've all heard about the student debt crisis, which is evidence that the cost of college was pushed onto the students and their families in the form of loans. Number two, costs are too high. Colleges and universities have had to grow the administration and staff in response to changes in culture and technology and increasing regulation. When I went to college, my university did not have the internet. Cell phones were part of science fiction that you might see in the movies. Now, we have to have an army of highly paid technology experts to keep all of the technology infrastructure working so we can go to school and do our jobs. To this, you can add the growth of student services, professional advisors, amenities like rec centers with climbing walls, and the proliferation of vice presidents, deans, associate deans to take care of the mountain of administrative work that comes with running a university. So costs have outpaced inflation. Number three, some things at a university lose money. Higher education always loses money on key activities like sports, research, and graduate education in some fields. Now, people are often aware that most of the universities have to heavily subsidize their sports unless they're kind of a blue chip flagship of the state. But students don't really want to attend a college or university that wouldn't even qualify to be in an athletic conference, so sports end up being mandatory. Even worse, nearly all universities lose money on research, and research is a key function of universities. For example, without scientific research, we would never have a solution for the coronavirus crisis. Now, all research is conducted by either industry, research institutes, the government, academic medical centers, and universities. And probably the lion's share is done by academic medical centers and universities. These research activities lose money, but research is mandatory to fulfilling the social contract of the university. That is, the university exists to support the public good by educating students, training professionals, and creating knowledge to help civilization. With respect to training professionals and graduate programs, it's true that some programs like medicine and law and some master's degree programs can generate revenue. Still, a lot of graduate programs in the sciences especially are going to lose money. But we want there to be physicians and lawyers and psychologists and podiatrists and social workers and audiologists and respiratory therapists and on and on and on. Without universities, there would be no licensed professionals to provide all the services that we need. And then number four, higher education essentially sells credits for money. The only stable funding for higher education is tuition, and mostly from undergraduates, which is why tuition is too high. Much of the budget for a lot of academic units on many campuses comes directly from tuition dollars, and this is then used to subsidize the existence of the university. So the money that you pay for a course is not just paying to take that course and get those credits. It's also helping to support the massive infrastructure of administrators, technology, student services, sports, research, and graduate education. But now, universities are faced with the very real prospect of not being able to sell as many credits for money. And so a lot of universities across the country are planning for financial problems. So the business model of education was already broken, and it's about to get worse. Now, don't worry. The same could be said for healthcare or K-12 education or the retirement system. These economic models have been broken for a long time, and somehow all of these different sectors of the economy keep on going. Colleges and universities will survive in one form or another. However, I want you to succeed, dear listener. So the reason I'm providing such a sophisticated understanding of how things are changing is to see if there's anything in there that you can use to win college and life. So what does all of this mean for you, psychology student? Well, in my view, the universities are going to try to cope by pushing harder on the efficient delivery of credits for tuition. That means more teaching track faculty who can only teach and who usually don't have any time or resources to work with you on any important projects. This means more distance learning and online courses that are staffed by somebody. This might mean more part-time faculty who don't even have an office, although it could also mean no part-time faculty at all and less course offerings. It also means a general erosion of the most important elements of success for undergraduate students, specifically the relationally integrated and work-integrated experiences that I think you need. It also means perpetuating the myth that your education only consists of getting the credits that check the boxes to get the degree on your transcript so that you can have the credential to get the job. I've argued before that that's basically a myth, but buying credits is what most students do, and it works for universities because this is the foundation of their economic model. However, this is what I call a myth, because the credit hours, the courses, the curriculum, the credential, they're only half the experience. You need more. And so if you'll allow kind of a mixed metaphor, your experiences outside the distance learning classroom aren't just the frosting on the cake. They're the meat in the sandwich. Let's look at a key study of over 30,000 college graduates that examined what kinds of experiences led to successful careers. I'm referring to the Gallup-Purdue Index Report from 2014, which has become one of my favorite studies in the area of higher education. It reported that where graduates went to college, public or private, big or small, elite or not elite, it didn't really matter much for people's current well-being and their work lives. What mattered was the experiences that they had in college. And the experiences that mattered a lot were only had by a minority of students. These experiences were so powerful that in one article they were called the magical elements of college linked to long-term success in work and life. So what are these magical elements? They were grouped into relational elements and experiential learning. The relational elements were answers to questions like, my professors at such and such a university care about me as a person. I have at least one professor who makes me excited about learning. I have a mentor at a university who encourages me to pursue my goals and dreams. So those are all relational, and that's what I call relationally integrated experiences. The experiential elements were, while attending university, have you had an internship or a job that allows you to apply what you're learning in the classroom? While attending university, I have worked on a project that took a semester or more to complete. And I am extremely active in extracurricular activities and organizations. So how many students do you think reported that they had all six of these experiences? 3%. Yes, just 3%. So what's my point? How many students will be able to report that they have all six of the great college, of these magical elements of college success, if the great quarantine of 2020 pushes more and more students to get all of their credits online? Not very many. Now, don't panic, because one surprise finding is that students who complete their education online still report that it's possible to have these experiences. For example, in 2019, the Gallup-2U, spelled capital 2, capital U, graduate outcome study found that when compared with national benchmarks of graduate school alumni who received their degrees in 2010 or later from any other university in an on-campus or an online setting, alumni from the partner programs of 2U reported that their student experiences were just as good, that their job outcomes were just as good, and that their lives and well-being were just as good. And so specifically, the exact same elements of relationally integrated experiences were endorsed just as often by the online students as a national comparison group of all college graduates. So what I'm leading to is that you can do it. Even in this time of quarantine and even in this time of social distancing, it's possible to develop relationships. And that's one of the things I'm going to talk about with Aurora. And as an aside, what is 2U? Well, it's an education technology company that has a technology platform for their partner universities like Harvard or Yale, and they use that to deliver distance learning. So don't despair. You can do it, even if you're doing only online education. But I'm going to stop short of saying that students that are completing their degree online will have as good an experience as students who attend a campus. Why would I say that? Well, only a small minority of students even have the right experiences, no matter where they are. Therefore, you would be at a major advantage if you know what the right experiences are and how to get them. So that's what we're going to talk about. And just by way of review, relationally integrated experiences comes from the Gallup-Purdue Index Report. I'm talking about experiential learning as discipline-integrated experiences, because that's your internship and your research experience that's related to the discipline you're studying, and in this case, psychology. And to those, I've added my main theme of inside information, which has always been the thing that I argue that you need, is to talk to people who are already there and find out what did they do and how did they get there. So let's call Aurora.
Hi.
Hey, Aurora.
How are you?
I'm doing good. Are you staying safe at home?
I'm trying. I'm doing my best.
So are you still doing a lot of advising?
Yes. And so advising looks a little different for me now. Instead of like organically having conversations with students and things will, you know, just come up and I can answer questions really before they even ask them when it comes to things like graduate school or something like that. Now it's turned into like, it is pulling teeth. It is asking a question and me giving that response. And there's no organicness to it. It's very transactional. Here's the thing that I need. Here's the response that you get. So it's different advising.
Yes. Transactional as opposed to transformational, where you can't just have that easy back and forth banter. It has to be like an email that says, I need this. I need this. That's just not the same as sitting down to have a talk.
Right. Yeah.
So what are you hearing out there? What are the students talking about right now?
Oh, well, they're concerned about moving forward. A lot of students don't really enjoy online courses. So if you've never taken an online course, it really shows you who you are as a student. I am a natural procrastinator. And so sometimes, you know, depending on the course or the instructor, they will just say you have 12 assignments and they're due before the last day of class. So there's no timing of it. And so you could say, yay, free semester, and not worry about anything until like 3 days before the semester ends. And then you have to do like 12 assignments. So it makes you really figure out, you know, how to create soft deadlines, how to, you know, even though I only have 12 assignments and there's no deadlines, I'm going to do one assignment a week or every day for 3 days, I'm going to hammer out two papers a day or something like that. So that way you have to create these skills that probably you've never had to deal with before or had to strengthen. And so students, some are adapting well to online courses and others are really struggling. So getting a lot of frustrated students, and I totally understand because it wasn't that they signed up for online, you know, it just happened.
So you called it procrastination, but a nicer way of putting that is that having classes on campus makes a routine and a schedule. Yep. And then there's the social pressure of showing up with your assignment done. There's the social facilitation of having other people also working on it, talking about it. There's just something about having a routine and a habit and having people ask you, like, how far have you gotten? That keeps you back. And so the rare
person. When it's just you, you're just kind of floating out by yourself and you really don't have anyone to gauge anything off of. And honestly, I think that online classes can be a lot of busy work because they want to prove that you're invested in the course. So they will have you not only do all of these readings, but then you have to make your own original post and then make comments off of two other students' posts in the class. And it's just, man, I'd rather just show up to class and just veg out for an hour. You know what I mean?
That's true. That's true.
I'd rather just sign my name and just tune out for 50 minutes. So I don't know.
I get it. And I feel like as everyone's making this transition, their attention is probably completely taken up by just getting by right now. But there's going to come a day when this is passed. And one of the things that I've been worrying about is, are people going to be able to get back on track getting the college experience that they need to get a job or to get into graduate school? And when you combine that with the fact that this has been incredibly disruptive to the economy and to higher education, you know, what are we looking at? And here's where I'm really glad that you're a certified career coach, because you might have some thoughts on, you know, what's going to happen to all these industries and what are people going to do? Maybe we don't have time for that discussion right now, but stay focused. The thing that we always argue people need is inside information. You know, what does it really mean to apply to this specific graduate school or in this career field? How did you get there? So people need inside information. They need relationally integrated experiences, which means they need that conversation with you. They need to be able to stop by and say hello. They need a professor or a staff person that they're working with on some kind of a project. And that person becomes their mentor and their coach in a way. And then third, people need discipline integrated experiences. And what I mean by that is something that takes a semester or more to complete that's related to what you're studying. And that could usually be an internship or a research experience, at least in psychology. If it were engineering, maybe it'd be a co-op. So the questions that I have today are, how are we going to do this? Get these three key ingredients now that the campus is closed, and then eventually when the campus is open. So let's just start at the beginning. How can people continue to think about getting inside information?
Well, I mean, not a lot has changed in regards to that, because before, when we talked about getting inside information, you were going to have to do a little bit of Scooby-Doo detective work on your own. Okay. You're going to have to look things up online. You're going to have to Google some stuff. You're going to have to look on LinkedIn. You're going to have to really kind of be an investigative reporter. That has not changed. So Google still works, thank God.
Yeah.
You know, you can still kind of do the Scooby-Doo detective work that you need to do in order to find out more information. So that hasn't changed. So that's good.
Yes, that is very good. And I agree, you'd still need to do your investigative reporting work. And then maybe what's changed is that you can't meet them for coffee.
Right. You can't meet them for coffee, but, you know, a lot of students that I've interacted with, and like even for my own personal connections, I didn't always connect with people in person because okay. they were just too busy in their work for me to meet them or for them to leave work. Like, I'm so busy in a normal week that I don't get the luxury to ever hardly ever leave the campus for lunch. Yeah. It's only during like dead times, like after the semester ends or like yeah. in the middle of the summer after orientation ends. Those are the only times that I really have the opportunity to leave the campus. So a lot of the relationships that I built with individuals were actually over the phone. And so,
okay, so you can just call people.
And just call people. So I know it sounds very 1982 to pick up the phone and actually talk to people. But yes. hey, you know, it's, you know, that's more than 6 feet away from somebody. So it's totally safe.
And you could also do a Zoom meeting or a Google Hangout or a Microsoft Teams if you have it. A couple of things about that. I would recommend still dressing professionally like you are actually going to show up in person. Don't be sitting in your pajamas on your bed, you know, with your posters behind you. Think about the backdrop and think about what you're doing as if it was still a real workplace to the best you can.
Exactly.
Just a thought. And you don't have to do video. You know, you could FaceTime. If you did want to do video, think about that. But you don't have to. You could just call people, say, hey, could I spend 5 minutes with you on the phone asking, you know, now that you're a manager of human resources, how does a person get there? That kind of thing.
It's absolutely
personal interviews, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Same thing for graduate school. A lot of the people that run graduate programs are now at home, but they might be willing to talk to you. You can email first and then call them and see if they'll take a phone call to talk about, so your program, what are the requirements? Your program, what do I need to know about the application process?
And believe it or not, as crazy as these times are, those individuals are more than happy to speak to somebody like you, the student, inquiring mm-hmm. about their programs, more so now than ever. Because yeah. those programs need students. They need intentional students in their programs. So I yes. would be, I think this is a good time for students really to start reaching out, because this is a time unlike any other that people are wanting that connection. So
yeah, absolutely. Kent State's going to waive the out-of-state tuition for some of the graduate programs.
Wow.
So if you were listening in another state and you'd ever thought about Kent State University, this is like a historic opportunity to come from another state and get in-state tuition for a master's degree at Kent State, because they want students. And so if anybody called me for admissions right now, I would be shocked, number one. And number two, I would to take the call, because that means this person is really on the ball and they're thinking about, what am I going to do when this is all over?
Right.
So that's inside information. But what are we going to do with relationally integrated experiences, either now or after this thing is over?
So that's a really good, thing to consider, because even students now that are currently doing internships, mm-hmm. you know, we've been working with the site supervisors, so basically the bosses at their internships, just to see, can they be doing meaningful work online Can they do telework? Can they do a lot of things that they were probably doing on a computer online in the office? Can they do that from home? And so even students that are looking at internships for summer and fall, we're encouraging them to kind of work with the site supervisors to see if this were to continue, how can we create a meaningful experience that's psychology based, but still being safe and working and doing telework. So working from home. And so it's going to be a little bit of brainstorming. It's not going to be, it's going to be kind of like experimental for the next little bit, because we don't know how things are going to shake out in the near future.
Have you heard of any students who are still doing any internships or research?
Yeah. So all of the students that are currently involved in internships, I think we have close to 20 students, I could be wrong, currently doing internships. And as far as I know, all of them are still able to do meaningful work that's psychology-based from home.
That's impressive.
Mm-hmm.
Really resilient. All the research at all the universities has ground to a halt, except for certain key things. And so it's been hard to connect with the undergraduate research assistants right now. So I don't know about that. Maybe the internships might work better, because those are usually social service agencies, nonprofits, things like that, that still have a lot of work to do.
Right.
And on the research front, that's all ground to a complete stop for the part. And so I wouldn't know what to have the research assistants do. But back to the relationship idea, I guess this would be a time to do your, investigative reporter work to find out what lab might you like to join in the fall, because we'll be back open for the fall and there's no start thinking ahead. I guess the relationships are tough right now, but if you can still do meaningful work, keep going. If not, lay the groundwork for the future. Make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
I guess one other thing, back to the work integrated experience, I think that in the new economy that we're going to be heading into, all internships, if they're at a nonprofit, are going to be more like a startup company than people realize, because there's kind of a hitting a restart on all their day-to-day business activities. And there's also a lack of funding if, like, donations dry up if we go into a recession. And what that means is that there may be a lot of opportunities for internships, because people are going to need unpaid labor. They're going to be hungry. Research labs are going to be hungry too, because they're going to need students to come back. They're going to be very hungry for help. And there's a lot of chaos as you're kind of starting up again. And so I guess that's one thing to keep in mind, is that if everything feels like a startup, you know, a really entrepreneurial person can really contribute if they're willing to work in that gray zone and handle uncertainty and just kind of all hands on deck to get the lab restarted, to get the nonprofit restarted. But it's a low funding environment probably for a lot of profits out there.
Yeah. And I would just say, you know, embrace this time, as crazy as it is. I mean, it's just like, and a lot of the students that I'm probably talking to weren't even born or born the year of 9/11, but it was kind of like when 9/11 happened. It was a lot of chaos, but there were people that if you didn't mind, you know, grabbing a face mask and jumping in and helping, then they would use you. And so if you have that same kind of mentality, like, you're not going to be walking into any well-oiled machines at this point, because even the most well-oiled machine is kind of thrown off, you know, at this point. So if you don't mind rolling your sleeves up and joining in and kind of being okay with a little bit of chaos, then this is going to be a good time for you, because you'll never learn this kind of experience in a book. You'll never learn this kind of experience inside of a classroom. Those four walls do not prepare you for something like this. And so I think that if you're brave enough, definitely start reaching out, and even if it's not an internship to gain credit, that experience that you're using is what you're going to put down on your resume, and you're going to talk about this for years to come.
Yeah, this is actually one of those defining moments in history, like Pearl Harbor or 9/11, where you'll remember what happened before and what happened after your state issued the shelter in place or the stay at home order.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a global event, unlike so many other events. This one is absolutely global, and it's going to play out for a really long time. And I think that what I'm hoping is that this reinforces for people that getting credits so that you finish the curriculum and get your degree is not enough.
That right.
There's a lot of stuff about college or university that was experience that you needed. And it was the relationships and the internships and the research or whatever your field of study is, but that is really important. And I agree that there will be a lot of opportunities as the dust settles. And it may be a very quick recession. Maybe we'll come roaring back. And it may take a long time. And so I guess we'll have to be resilient and flexible. But I think that for me, this just verifies how important it will be to get those relationally integrated and work integrated experiences somehow. And, you know, it occurs to me that one of our episodes is, should you take a gap year? I think there's going to be a lot of people taking a gap
year.
They wanted
to. I agree.
Just because they're out of money.
That's right.
So, I mean, I don't mean to laugh about it, but it might be a really rough year. You may not have the bandwidth to apply to graduate school right now.
Mm-hmm.
If you're finishing up your spring semester and you were thinking about applying, you know, this is a tough time. And you may not get to do a campus visit like you normally would.
Right.
Paul. And so if you're taking a gap year, I think that's okay. Just make sure you use it well.
And something I wanted to bring up as well, you know, when we're thinking about, you know, as the dust settles and you say are finding yourself, you know, at the end of your college journey and you graduate and you're applying for positions or maybe you're trying to get into graduate school, I have no doubt that an employer during an interview will ask you, what did you do during this time?
Yeah.
Where were you and what were you taking part in? You know, so if you said, well, I was just taking my classes during that time. That's one thing. They can't blame you for that. But if you say, I was taking classes, but then, you know, once they lifted, you know, the stay at home order, I then started volunteering at this place and this place and this place. And I started really getting my hands in the dirt and I really started helping out. They'll see just how invested you are. And mm-hmm. I think it's really going to be telling about a lot of students. I think it's really going to separate, you know, the student from the professional.
Yeah, it really will. And I guess we all just graduated in a sense from being just a student to being a citizen and a member of society. And to the extent that you can act like a professional now, I hear about so many encouraging things that some of the students are doing, whether it's sewing masks or collecting food or just doing whatever they can do in their local community. And those are the kind of stories that are going to make it look like you were a contributor.
Yeah.
I agree with you. This is a chaotic time, but it doesn't mean all the opportunities are gone.
Right.
So as a career counselor, do you think that there's any way to read the tea leaves on what's going to be happening in the next year or two? I mean, do you have any ideas?
No. I mean, all we can do is speculate at this time. I just heard yesterday that the state of Ohio has over 3,000 jobs that were just recently posted that were COVID-19 directly related jobs.
Yeah.
So, I mean, positions that you never thought would even exist until now, you know, so needing a spot for somebody to fill this, you know, there's just a gap. Like, how could we have ever, you know, seen into the future to figure out this? So, I just have no idea. And my crystal ball is a little cloudy right now. So
mine too.
No idea, what's ahead for us. But just like I said before, like, if you get your hands in the dirt now, or as soon as it's, you know, feasible, I think that you're going to be better off as a student, gaining that experience, putting yourself into a different category, not just a student, but as a professional, really contributing to getting, you know, this area back to where it could be or into a new normal. Because now you're going to be on the ground level.
Absolutely.
Which is very, it really speaks a lot to who you are as an individual. And I think a lot of graduate programs would be very excited to have students that are that are contributing in that way to be part of that program.
A lot of employers. Mm-hmm. A lot of employers would love to see someone that got real busy when the restart happened.
Right.
A lot of businesses value professionals that can work in the gray areas, make intelligent decisions, listen to feedback, and cope with uncertainty and ambiguity. Mm-hmm. And so that's a valuable skill to have, and we're all about to be tested.
You're right.
Well, stay safe. Stay home.
I am. Thank you. You do the same.
Thank you for joining us for the Psychology Pathways podcast. Remember, we're not acting as an official spokesperson for anyone, and this podcast is not endorsed by any department or university. The views expressed here are ours alone. This podcast is the private social media property of Joel Hughes and Aurora Alexander, and is not a social media platform representing any department or university. We hope you'll join us for the next episode.
If you enjoyed the show, rate us at iTunes or Spotify and tell your friends.
Find out more at psychpathways.com. That's P-S-Y-C-H pathways.com.
And send your listener questions to psychologypathwayspodcast@gmail.com.